This Civic Media podcast is sponsored by UW Organ and Tissue Donation. Organ donations are desperately needed, and now is the right time to become an organ donor. Talk to your family. Get the dot. Save lives. Go to heroicdeed.com.
Broadcasting across the state of Wisconsin on the Civic Media Radio Network and around the world on the Civic Media app, this is the Dom Salvia Show. And now, here's your host, Dom Salvia.
And welcome back to the Dom Salvia Show. Thank you so much for listening. You can be a part. 855-752-4842. 855-75-CIVIC. It's Monday. It's 5 o'clock. So jazzed as hell to reintroduce to you one of our favorites, Harvey K., Professor Emeritus of Democracy at the University of Wisconsin, Green Bay. And Harvey, I've been coming up with a new term. How about this one? Harvey K., a Delano Democrat.
That...
See, it's got the two D's, man. You with me?
Well, the problem with that is that was his mother's family name, if I'm not mistaken. And you might not realize that he had a father too, just for the record.
Come on, man. You're killing my buzz over here.
He was so excited coming in talking about double D's.
Double D's, man. I'm a Delano Democrat. We gotta make it simple. Everyone knows Franklin. Well, maybe not everyone. People should know.
Tell you what. Yeah. Subscribe to my arguments and you can call a Dom Democrat.
All right. I got it. I'll take it. I'll take a Dom Democrat. But Franklin Delano Roosevelt, a big favorite here on this show. Harvey, I know we're going to get to what we think the Dems need to do to win. And some of that, of course, is getting back to FDR's policies and supporting those and pushing those and articulating those, educating people on those. But before we get there, I want to get your reaction. After we talked last week, of course, that United Health executive was murdered in New York. And, you know, a terrible tragedy, you know, kids lost a dad and wife lost a husband and families lost a relative and friends lost a friend. And that's never good. That said, the numbers that I saw that he was pushing through the insurance company of his division specifically, $261 billion in revenue last year. He himself made just over $10 million in base salary and, you know, other options and benefits. On top of that, he is also or was also involved in a fraud and insider trading case where he sold 11 days before news it came public that they were under a DOJ investigation. He sold like over 30% of his personal stock in the company and reaped a $11 million profit in doing so. So he was looking himself at some very serious time for those accusations as well. So aside from the tragedy, and murder is always bad, we don't solve our problems that way. The reaction was really stunning to me. The gallows humor, the lack of empathy or sympathy for a healthcare executive. And I can kind of understand how many people have been rejected, denied care. I mean, that's kind of how they make their money, Harvey. What's your sense on how this portrays the American psyche right now?
Well, it actually portrays an American psyche that is divided powerfully, not by just questions of race and gender, which I think are actually secondary right now, to questions of gross class inequalities.
Yeah.
I mean, if people come to see that as a question of, you know, this rich guy, very rich guy, super rich guy, okay, was involved as are other executives in the insurance industry. You know, it's not him alone, obviously, it's right. A whole class of folks. And making vast sums of money. I'm repeating myself over and over because I think that's the critical thing. And then many other people, first of all, can't get health insurance. Second of all, work two jobs and still can't get health insurance. Okay, I mean, their anger expresses itself in that kind of fashion. You know, of right. I also heard somebody else say the kinds of expenditures of resources in tracking the killer compared to the other hundreds of murders that take place in cities each week, probably, yeah. Well, at least in New York City over the course of a year. It's astounding, you know, if let's put it this way, for the sake of everyone's family, I suppose, let's hope that you get that kind of attention if anyone ever takes you out. I mean, but I'm glad you opened up by saying, I mean, it is tragic. Okay.
Yeah,
there's no question. And a resort to singular assassinations is always a very perverse response, and one we should never, ever endorse, I think.
And I think it does shine, again, the reaction, not the action of the killer, who apparently there's somebody in custody right now, which is good. I mean, if you pay the price for the murder. It is the reaction that I think is very telling. And I'm wondering, are we able to capitalize on that? I mean, it just highlights, as I throw those statistics out, of the revenue and the profitability. Oh, I'm sorry. I think the division made 20-some billion dollars on the 200-some million dollars in gross revenue on top of the pay and all that. So these are gross, big numbers. And they're basically, to my humble opinion, taken on the back by denying claims. That's how you do. If you paid all the money out, you wouldn't make that kind of money. Do you think there's new room for conversation for a Medicare for all or something along those lines, Harvey?
Let's put it this way. I remember in 2020, the Democratic debate stage, and I don't remember exactly who challenged Bernie Sanders on this question, but one of the other candidates challenged Bernie regarding his push for Medicare for all, the closest we would ever, ever have been able to come to some kind of universal health care, by saying, do you want to bankrupt America? Well, people have got to understand, the insurance companies are bankrupting plenty of people already. And if they're making that kind of money, right, then sure as hell we'd be better off reinvesting national resources in a national healthcare system where people are not rejected who have pressing needs. I mean, will it help? I don't know, but I can tell you this, that we will not finish the healthcare question now, because the question of what I think the Democrats need to do to win is very much involved in this question of national healthcare.
It certainly is. Harvey K., Professor Emeritus of Democracy at the University of Wisconsin, Green Bay, joining me for this and the next segment. Harvey, always a pleasure, man. All right, so what do the Dems need to do? I mean, obviously, let's start with this. Let's talk about the healthcare. How does this play into a Democratic victory going forward, Harvey?
Okay, that's more the punchline as opposed to the starter.
All right, well, okay. I'll let you lead it however you want, man. You tell me, brother.
Well, here's the thing. One of the subjects that has come up, not just from folks like me and by folks like me, but, you know, Bernie Sanders himself launched the big debate about what are the Democrats to do now that they're essentially leaderless. Okay, leaderless. And they're a total mess right now, the Democrats. Okay, well, the first thing the Democrats really need to do, whoever emerges, whether it's Ben Wickler here or Ken Martin out of Minnesota, the leadership of the Democrat, the new leadership, really must take up this question. Does the Democratic Party seek to be the party of working people or not? And if not, then we're in trouble. And if so, then the first thing they need to do is they need to invite the labor unions, AFL-CIO as a representative of labor unions, back into the party. Now, did they ever throw them out? No, not exactly. But back in 68 to 70, 72, the Democratic Party reorganized the basis upon which candidates are chosen. I should say how candidates are chosen, national candidates. And what happened is they literally reduced the power and influence of labor in the process. This, and by the way, the ironic part is that this was a commission that was headed by George McGovern of South Dakota. And most people don't realize that move, by the way, they said this was in favor of basically small d democratizing the party more, better representation from women and minorities. That's how they put it at the time.
That was a justification at the time.
Right. Well, let's keep, interestingly enough, George Meany, the head of the AFL-CIO, walked out of the Democratic Party convention in 70, that would be 72, and took his entourage with him, in protest at the treatment of labor by that McGovern Commission and the Democratic Party itself. As a sidebar to this, nobody remembers this except those of us who had to do the research on it, is the fact that McGovern in 1966 was in the Senate, and the question came up of bringing an end to the Taft-Hartley Act of 1947, by which the Republicans, in many ways, sort of neutered, not totally, but really weakened the ability of the labor movement to organize in the South and elsewhere against, you know, the right to work policies. And so the question came before the Senate, and McGovern was there when the filibuster began. And when the vote was taken, what do they call it, a vote on cloture, the idea of ending the filibuster, he did not vote to end the filibuster. And Meany didn't forget that either. So here's the thing. Here we are, what are we, 52 years later. It's about time the Democratic Party figured out how not simply to engage working people in canvassing, not simply in securing dollars from the labor unions to support their candidates, but how to more directly involve the labor movement in talking about the platform, in selecting the candidates who they believe would be the right candidate to lead a party that claims to represent working people. So that's my first thing. I think that ought to be this new, or let me put it this way. If they don't do it, I think the labor movement headed by the FLCO, especially voices like Sean Fain and Sarah Nelson and even, you know, Sean O'Brien, these people need to make more noise about literally engaging in the Democratic Party's deliberations about where the party's going.
In doing so, Harvey, we're kind of, you know, this is legacy, right? I mean, these things don't happen. You didn't fall off the coconut tree today, right? This is a legacy situation. And so to that point, then, wouldn't the corporate backers of the current Democratic Party maybe have some issue with that?
Undeniably. But let us be clear about this. The corporate backers, the billionaires and multi-millionaires, they have literally captured the Democratic Party. I mean, we saw this with the Harris campaign, when at the outset, apparently there was serious talk that they were going to do a kind of Bernie Sanders initiative of pointing a finger at billionaires and the big corporate bosses.
Yeah.
And they didn't. They were warned, the Harris campaign, to back off doing that. I mean, look, everybody knows the power of money inside of not only the Republican, but also the Democratic Party. And we've got to start getting the people back into it.
Harvey K., Professor Emeritus of Democracy at the University of Wisconsin, Green Bay. He's our favorite Delano Democrat. And Harvey, everybody needs money. That's why they call it money. Come back with us, 855-752-4842. We will continue on our suggestions on how the Democrats can continue to win going forward. Stick around.
You're listening to Civic Media. Stay up to date on the latest news and information for your local community and Wisconsin by signing up for our free email newsletter. Visit civicmedia.us/email to get started.
And welcome back to the Dom Salvia Show, 855-752-4842, 855-75-CIVIC. Harvey K., Professor Emeritus of Democracy at the University of Wisconsin, Green Bay. Sticking around for another segment. Harvey, thank you for doing so. Hey, Dems, you want to win? How do you do it? Well, invite labor back. Not just go out and get the labor, but like literally, what, bring them back to the table. Give them some power within the party itself. As mentioned, what, late 60s, early 70s, kind of pushed out labor's role to, what, bring in more diversity, quote unquote. But as you mentioned, to me, Harvey, there's more diversity in labor than there was back then.
Oh, labor is the most diverse force in America, decidedly the most diverse organized force in this country. You couldn't get more diverse than the labor movement right now.
All right. So what else we got? We'll bring labor back in. So Ben Wickler, okay, our guy from here in Wisconsin, that's who I want to see at the DNC. Ben, we got his ear. We'll convince him of that. What other suggestions do we have?
Okay. The second thing is that they've got to start calling out. This goes back to the other thing that came up in our discussion previous segment. They've got to call out the corporate elite and the billionaires. Look, those are the folks who launched their class war against the democratic achievements of the 1930s to the 1960s. And everybody knows it, okay? At least those of us old enough to remember. This has been a long haul that these folks have been pursuing and ultimately destroying the democratic achievements of a president and a generation from the 30s through the 1960s. So that I think that's imperative. And by the way, a good lesson for that would be that of FDR. You know, FDR, what in 1936, when he accepted the renomination to run again, that is for president of the United States for a second term, he said, "The economic royalists," he meant the corporate bosses, "complain we seek to overthrow the institutions of America. But what they really complain of is that we seek to take away their power. Our allegiance to American institutions requires the overthrow of this kind of power."
Yes.
Now, that's a gutsy guy. And then later that fall in Madison Square Garden, he pointed out how literally capital had organized a very elite movement to try to end his presidency. And he said to the audience and radio audience, "I welcome their hatred." We got to have somebody with that kind of guts, yeah. not the Democrats who tell us, I want to fight for you, and then tell the corporate bosses nothing will fundamentally change. Okay, that has to fundamentally change.
Yeah, those two statements, those cannot exist at the same time. What are you fighting for? I've seen some recent reporting, Harvey, on how it's almost like the billionaire class, they don't even have their proxies anymore. They're just like, hell with it. I'm just going to be the face. Elon Musk, right? All these cats, Vivek Ramaswamy, Donald Trump. I remember back when the first time I heard about Americans for Prosperity and the Koch brothers and some of these different groups, I'm like, wait, what? Who's that, huh? Like, these folks used to, if you were in, maybe you knew, but it wasn't so blatant and out there. Now it's just like, hell, we don't even need to have proxies. We'll just go do that role ourselves. I'm a billionaire. Because I'm a billionaire, I'm smarter than everybody else. I'll figure it out. And I'm very concerned about that. Harvey, do you think it's better or worse that they're the ones, in fact, now trying to step into these roles instead of having proxies?
I think it's pernicious. I think it's absolutely, it's unbelievable. Who are they? Who elected them?
Yeah.
Okay. And now we've got Donald Trump and Musk, you know, with this, what is it called? D-O-G-E, Department
Doge.
Of
Doge.
There is no, you cannot create a department as president. It's not the way it works. And American people are being bamboozled on this stuff. Bamboozled.
I'm concerned about the American people, and specifically our attention to history and our education or lack thereof. But maybe we'll get there. Okay, what else we got? We got two options.
Well, the third thing is, okay, not only should they be hostile to the corporate bosses, calling them out, they should also be engaging the imagination and the needs and wants of the American people. So, as you've heard me say for quite some time, the Democrats need to be speaking of developing, maybe someday enacting, but definitely in the meantime, pursuing an economic bill of rights. And first and foremost, now to go back to the thing we started with, healthcare. Everyone knows that healthcare is the most fundamental question in the lives of working people and their families, okay? We need an American rendition of socialized or national healthcare, okay? That is essential. And I would go on another time. I don't want to take all the listing the other nine elements of an economic bill of rights, because I do think there's another key ingredient, which we definitely should consider. And that is, Democrats need to choose candidates who will not only promise to fight for us, they will encourage the fight in us to back them and to pursue the kinds of bills and laws that will address the desperate needs of the vast majority of Americans. So, you know, so there it is. You've got invite labor back in a significant way. Two, call out the corporate elite. Three, think about economic rights. And four, in choosing candidates, choose candidates who will encourage a fight in people, not candidates who simply promise to fight for you.
Harvey, sounds like we need an energetic leader type. Is there anybody out there right now off the top of your head that you think mildly fits that role?
No. I mean, Bernie Sanders is old.
Yeah.
Let's face it. He's old. But his voice is not. It's still a young voice. As much as possible, I think progressives and others should be rallying around his voice. And let's see what emerges. I mean, there are decidedly progressive figures. Okay. There's this guy out of, is it Texas? Kassar, who's a really interesting character.
Now, elected the Progressive Caucus? Or was that
right? He just took the leadership of the Progressive Caucus. Yeah. He seems very interesting and very promising. Ro Khanna has a definite interest in these kinds of things. There are others. AOC is much too young to be considered, I think, for a national presidential kind of campaign.
But she's certainly on that path, and she inspires in all sorts of folks, not just the progressives, but certainly on the megas as well. Bring the labor Absolutely. Back into the party around the decision-making, not just to go out and do the work. Call out the corporate elite always. An economic bill of rights. Yes, let's address the healthcare issues. We can do that, especially if we call it the corporate elite who don't want to change that. And of course, find some encouraging and inspiring leaders to encourage the fight. We'll do the fight, encourage the fight within ourselves. Harvey Kaye, you're one of them. My favorite Delano Democrat professor emeritus of democracy over at the University of Wisconsin Green Bay. Harvey, I'm going to keep on saying it till it's a thing. Thank you for your time once again, my friend.
As ever, thank you for having me on.
My pleasure. Folks, stick around. We'll be right back. 855-752-4842.
You're an organ donor, right? Well, here's a tragic fact. Approximately 20 people die each day waiting for precious donated organs. You could make a life-saving decision simply by getting that important dot on your driver's license. That little dot shows those who need to know that you've made a decision to donate organs at a critical time. Go to heroicdeed.com to learn more about the importance of organ donation and how you can make your wishes known. Talk to your family. Get the dot. Save lives. HeroicDeed.com.
And welcome back to the Dom Salvia Show, 855-752-4842, 855-75-CIVIC. Thank you to Harvey Kaye, Professor Emeritus of Democracy, University of Wisconsin, Green Bay, our favorite Delano Democrat. I'm going to keep saying it. I'm going to keep saying
You're
it.
You're going to make it a thing.
I'm going to make it a thing. his great suggestions for the Democratic Party to win, bring mm-hmm. labor in. And I got to tell you, man, I mean, I know there's been, you know, legacy things with the Democratic Party, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, I mean, talk about things that happened before I was born or when I was 1 year. You know, I get it. Don't know the specifics. That's why I like talking to the old folks, man, or the older, wiser ones, you know, like our friends like Harvey, our friends like Matt Rothschild, like when mm-hmm. Earl comes on, and hell, even to that point, James Santel. You know, these folks, they're older than me. They've been around. They've been talking and dealing and thinking about these things much longer than I have, and they bring insight and knowledge to me, which I appreciate because Lord knows I need it.
Yeah.
So thank you, Harvey. You know, it hasn't been officially like a regular thing, but we're going to probably make it more of a regular thing. I know he's going to be out of town, unavailable next week, but I think the following week we'll try to get Harvey on again. We will continue these conversations because I think they are inspiring. I think they're enlightening, and we got to keep on going. So bring labor back, bring them around, not just to do the work, but a seat at the table, calling out the corporate elite. And now they can be challenging because, you know, it's easy when people got money. Oh, you don't need people if you got money. Well, money doesn't do you any
good.
But you know, what does the money do for you? You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. If it doesn't manipulate and shape what people do, you still need the people. And you can do that. You can manipulate, quote unquote. You can inspire, right? You can engage with folks without the money. And that's why I think to his other point, not just bringing the working Americans in and calling out the corporate elite, but the FDR, the Economic Bill of Rights, which of course includes the big one here, which is of course healthcare. And I kind of got to the conversation about this murder of this healthcare executive and just the terrible gallows humor of people's reaction to it. It goes to tell you something about how people are feeling, and it's I think it's something that we have to identify. I think it's certainly there. And why is it there? Because people are feeling like they're getting screwed. I think some of this, and there's an article, I think it was the New York Times today, basically saying how, you know, the folks, young males went from Bernie to Trump kind of a thing. I'm not going to get into it a whole lot, but I think there is, and I have some of this in me, a recognition that, man, things aren't going as they should, or things are really fishing, or I don't like this, or I'm getting screwed on that.
So what do you do with that feeling?
Well, you blow the whole thing up and you burn it down, you stomp on it. And you pee on the ashes.
And then what?
And then you got to engage. You know?
Yeah.
So, I mean, you can rhetorically maybe just do all that in your head, have an exercise. But the point is, eventually you come full circle back around to engagement and self-governance. And that's what we need to do. Mm-hmm. And when you have, and I think to Harvey's point, candidates that inspire, not just to do the fight, to bring the fight to, quote unquote, the bad governance, let's call it, but to inspire that within other folks. And that is, you know, that's not something you teach. And I think those folks come along fairly rarely. But I think it's very important. And who are those folks? Well, you got to find them. That's part of the mm-hmm. engagement you talk about now, you know, kind of pulling back to your local communities, your local government, your state government, perhaps. When we see what might is being threatened or is being promised, depends on your perspective, of programs coming from the mega Trump administration. We got to find those folks. And when they're there, we should prop them up. We should support them, encourage them. And there's folks out there. You know, and here's the sad thing about it, too. There's a lot of very, very super talented folks out there that want absolutely nothing to do with politics or governance or elections or any of that stuff. And I think that's unfortunate. And I also think that some folks that have been successful in other endeavors automatically think that that's going to translate over to a successful, political run. And I would think that most people don't win. Certainly don't win on the first try.
Certainly not.
And some don't win at all. And you know, mm-hmm. so you got to be ready for that. You got to be up for that. If you look at the folks that think that because they were successful in other endeavors, think Tim Michaels here running mm-hmm. for governor. Think who's a mustache guy who just what's it? Hubdy.
So memorable.
I wonder if he's staying here for Christmas. I mean, is he?
Well,
he sent
it's
out
really
some,
cold here.
You know what I'm saying? Laguna Beach sounds really nice right now. Very successful in his endeavors in banking and development and mm-hmm. so forth. Doesn't necessarily, certainly didn't translate to a successful campaign. Now, it was close.
Yes.
And if he was perhaps a little more personal, a little more engaging, a little
maybe
less
maybe had
strange,
policy.
Policy schmalacy.
I know.
I mean, come on.
Come on.
Who needs policy?
Who needs that? It's boring.
I got a mustache. 855-752-4842. So thank you, Harvey. Thank you, folks, for listening. Let's keep going on it. Jack from the Mac, we'll get you next as soon as I can get control of the computer. Hey, Jack, welcome back. What do you got?
Thanks for taking the call. I had some thoughts about this immigration purge.
Yeah.
When I originally heard about it, like we're going to deport 11 million people, and my initial thought was, and you're going to do that without ever deporting by accident real American citizens, and considering that about 1 in 3, I think Hispanic families has a relative who is undocumented at this point. There's going to be some issues with that, I thought. Well, it's even worse. He's saying, yeah, we're going to throw the undocumented out, and we're going to throw the citizens out with them. I mean, this is incredible.
Yeah, and come on, man. There's not going to be any lawsuits involved with this. I mean, they're going to fight this as well they should. Anybody would fight that. Tooth and nail, Jack.
The Supreme Court's going to help?
Yeah, well, you know, I don't know about that. Hey, thanks for the call, Jack. You know what? To that point, I know we want to get to some of the healthcare cuts from Donald Trump, his interview yesterday with Christine Welker on the NBC. But cut number 10, Jess, when Donald Trump talks about deporting everyone. Do we have that one available?
We can in just a moment. All right, if you want to go back to the phone.
Let's get to that one shortly. 855-752-4842. Mary from Wauwatosa. Happy days, Mary. Welcome. What do you got for us?
Hi, Dom, and thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I'm calling in regarding our ailing health system, which the murder of the executive has brought into the limelight. Some time ago, a few years ago, I heard interviewed a MD by the name of Elizabeth Rosenthal, on the web. And she wrote a book called An American Sickness, How Healthcare Became Big Business and How You Can Take It Back. Copyright was 2019. Hmm. And so my takeaway on this and a change that I've made myself is when I'm, in a hospital situation and I'm required to sign to agreement to, pay any bills that exceed health care coverage, the comment that she made that we should be inserting in that, and you can do this with any contract, that you're required to read and sign to. And she said that you should insert the words, so long as the provider is in my medical network. And she made the comment that a hospital knows which physicians are going to be in the network.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if you picture being in surgery and the surgeon might have an assistant or call in somebody, who is not in the network, and then yours truly gets billed by this party out of network, and is responsible. So inserting this in that contract alleviates you of paying that's
a wow, Mary. That's a great point. Appreciate you bringing it up.
And that's something that really does happen to a lot of people, that the hospital is in network. The doctor who you agreed to go to is in network, but a nurse who was there for the day isn't in network. The anesthesiologist who was filling in that day isn't in network.
And so that ends up, if it doesn't get covered, you got to end up covering that
yep.
yourself personally. It's just such a rat. Come on, people. We do have some health care. Let's get to the deporting everyone. Mm-hmm. Then we'll get to Mary's point. Jack was first talking about deportation. Mary's talking about the health care. Let's talk to Jack's point. Cut number 10, please.
Talk about mass deportation, one of your big agenda items. You've talked about prioritizing people who have criminal histories.
Correct.
But is it your plan to deport everyone who is here illegally over the next 4 years?
Well, I think you have to do it. And it's a very tough thing to do.
I think you have to do it. It's a very tough thing to do.
Mm-hmm.
Does that include the families?
Sounds like it.
The citizen kids? Yeah, that's going to be problematic. All right, let's get to Trump on the health care, as we talked about the economic bill of rights.
Uh-huh.
Redoing our health care system? Well, that's something we should certainly do. I don't think there's anybody who should be out there making, what have they made, $281 billion in 1 year in revenue?
Mm-hmm.
The murdered CEO from United Health, his division.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so make sure we have the right note. That was 1 year.
Sure about that.
That was 1 year. Here's Trump on the health care plan. Cut number 15,
please. Yeah, buckle in, everyone.
Yeah.
Buckle in.
I made it so that it works. Now,
referring to
Obamacare.
Try
to overturn it.
It's
lousy.
You did
try to overturn it. You did have your Justice Department try to direct the Supreme Court to
overturn. We got a little bit of a surprising opinion, to be honest with you. If it would have been overturned, we would have had much better health care right now. But right now, we have something that I made the best of. I could have made the worst of it, and it would have fallen by the wayside.
Yeah, okay.
I did the right thing from a human standpoint.
Which is?
But, I'm sort of proud of my decision.
Yeah.
At the same time.
What decision?
Sometimes I regret it. I told the people, and I gave them the money to do it. I said, fix it. Make it work. Because people would have suffered.
You didn't bring a plan.
But it's too bad that they voted no. I wish John McCain, he fought for 10 years on replacing Obamacare for 10 years, and then he voted against. Nobody understands.
No plan.
Sir, you said during the campaign you had concepts of a plan. Do you have an actual plan at this point for health care?
Yes, we have concepts of a plan that would be better.
Still but, just concepts? But, do you have a fully developed plan?
Let me explain.
Yeah, please.
We have the biggest... healthcare companies looking at it. We have doctors. We're always looking because Obamacare stinks.
We're looking.
It's lousy. there are better answers. If we come up with a better answer, I would present that answer to Democrats and to everybody else, and I do something about it.
Okay.
But until we have that, or until they can approve it, but we're not going to go through the big deal.
What?
I am the one that saved Obamacare, I will say. And I did the right thing.
I will say no.
I could have done the more political thing and killed it. And all I had to do was starve it to death.
You did try to have your Justice Department effectively kill it, though,
Kill it from a legal standpoint, but from a physical standpoint, I made it work.
In your concepts of a plan,
I'm trying to legally kill it.
Will people with pre-existing conditions still have coverage? And can you guarantee their prices will not go up?
The answer is yes. They'll have coverage. You have to have it.
And what about their
prices? You know what?
About their prices?
Yeah, right.
I want the prices to go down. I want to have better health care for less money. And there are ways of doing it, I believe. And I have the smartest people in that world.
What are they?
That's a separate world unto itself. I have the smartest people in that world looking at it and trying. And if they come up with something, I will present it. Now, maybe you won't be able to sell it. But if we get better health care for less money, I believe it's very saleable.
Just very quickly, when will we see your fully developed plan? When are you going to show
it? I don't know that you'll see it at all. I can only say that we have some of the best health care people. I've always tinkered with it. I think it's a little hard to explain.
What? Are you folks listening to this? Did you just hear what I heard?
I did.
I mean, it's like if and when and smart and it's a little hard to explain. It's don't worry your pretty little self about it, Jess. It's too hard for you.
Concepts of a plan.
We'll be fine. It's gonna be. How about this? We have Medicare, right? Mm-hmm. Why don't we just do Medicare for all? Let's just look at Medicare.
It's complicated.
We have government insurance for probably, I mean, off the back of the napkin math, a third of U.S. citizens. You can tell me we couldn't cover everybody. Now, would that make United Health maybe not make $281 billion in 1 year? I mean,
might.
Maybe. But, you know, what are they providing? What service are they providing to the healthcare users for that money?
Well, that's not the demographic that they're concerned about.
I mean, it's a little hard to explain. Come back with us, 855-752-4842.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
Welcome back to the Dom Salvia Show, 855-752-4842, 855-75-CIVIC. It's a phone line. It's a text line. Andrew from Maine, he texts in, the biggest healthcare companies are looking into how they can make more money.
Shocking.
Isn't that always the thing? Okay, so I did pull it up because I was curious, and here is what I found. This is an interesting statistic for you to ponder. According to the Wall Street Journal, 2023... annual revenues for ExxonMobil, $333 billion. 2023, according to the SEC.gov archives for United Health Group, for the same year, $371 billion. So in 2023, United Healthcare Group grossed more revenue than ExxonMobil. That seems not right. I'm just saying, man. That just seems, but come on, this is outrageous. And you're telling me that, you know, the American people are getting screwed on healthcare? We pay so much money for healthcare. We do not get the top line results other countries do. I mean, this is something that can and should be addressed. That's why you see the gallows humor on the internet about this very tragic murder. That's why, because people feel like they're getting screwed. And for someone who lost a loved one because a claim was denied or whatever the case was, you think they're going to have any tears at all? Once again, ExxonMobil 2023 revenue, $333 billion. 2023 revenue for United Health Group, $371 billion. Man.
Yeah.
They used to say money was in the oil. No, hell no.
No.
Money's in denying claims.
Yes, it is.
855-752-4842. Wisco Paul, you will be up. Welcome. Oh, I'm trying to get you here, Paul. I keep losing the mouse. Okay, Boomer. All right, Paulie, what's up? How you doing?
Hey, good afternoon, Don. Thanks for taking my call.
Yeah.
Great show as always. Yeah, if you do a good job. Hey, what I don't understand, well, hey, first of all, when I listen to Trump, I have a hard time believing the Democrats lost to this guy because he really never answers any questions. But
that's policy and specificity matter, Paulie. He would have lost the election. But, you know, apparently it's just about owning the libs, and that's what you get.
Yeah, that is very unfortunate. But the big thing about the Affordable Care Act is if you had pre-existing conditions before that act, you were screwed. You couldn't get insurance, which means you were either going to go bankrupt or die. So that was the biggest thing.
Or Paulie, if you could get insurance, it'd be super, super high because they'd tack a premium onto it.
Yeah, that's correct. They would, the deductible might be $8,000, $9,000, $10,000. So, a lot of people ended up bankrupt or with no insurance and actually literally died. So, the system you have now is a start in the right direction, but it could be made better. I hope he doesn't just try to ditch it. I think that's what McCain did. He says, "Hey, we can't just ditch it.
Yeah.
Let's just make it better." But yeah. At any rate, Bernie had some really good answers on health care, and apparently, that's a whole other story for another day.
Well,
okay, thanks for taking.
Yeah, of course, Paulie.
Thanks for taking my call, Don.
Thank you, man. Appreciate you listening as always. It's a story for today, and it's a story for tomorrow, and it's a story for the next day because this doesn't leave us, man. We don't have to accept it. We don't have to continue to live under it. We can legislatively change things. That's the wonderful thing about it. Now, do we have the temerity to do so? Can we speak up, against the corporate elite? Can we engage with the working population in this country and maybe our immigrant population as well? Can we do that? Do we have a leaders out there that are willing to do that? Someone like Bernie, but maybe a little younger. Those words and the passion that Bernie has, they resonate. They still matter. I mean, these are conversations that should never, ever go away because it's obscene. We don't have to live with it. We can regulate it. Yeah, regulated markets. Mm-hmm. Weird how that is.
And what's that thing about self-governance?
Yeah. Well, you got to engage. You got to use it. You got to be out there. 855-752-4842. Hi, Dom. The revenue for Healthcare United, is that gross or is that profit after their expenses? No, Ross from Crawford County, the revenues that I listed, once again, United Healthcare, $371 billion in 2023, and for ExxonMobil, $333 billion. Those are gross revenue numbers, so you can take that as what you need to do. Here we go. That was Ross. Mark from Sussex, so it's okay to murder the CEO, ? Okay. No, Mark, it is not okay to murder the CEO, regardless of how obscenely profitable that CEO is, regardless of any of the fraud or insider trading that he may or may not have been involved in, regardless of how many people died because of denied claims. No, Mark, N-O, it is not okay to murder CEOs. It is not okay to murder anybody. Political murder, aggrieved murder, self-defense, maybe. But that's it, Mark. No. But it doesn't mean that we cannot objectively look at the terrible healthcare system that we have and wonder and understand, not wonder, to understand why some of the gallows humor out there on the internet exists. Because people are getting screwed by the system. That's some of the reason why Donald Trump got elected. Now, it might be misguided. So we need someone to specify that, to point it, put them in the right direction, take that passion. Yes, absolutely. There are things in this world, in this country, in our government, in our lives that can be better. But we got to identify them and work hard to do that and find folks that are willing to stand with us as well. Thank you for joining us, standing with us. Thank you, Jess P.S. on the board. Thank you, Harvey K., Professor Emeritus at the University of Wisconsin, Green Bay. He will be more of a regular thing going forward. Folks, stick around. Pete Schwab and Nightlight is coming up next. We'll be back here tomorrow. Have a wonderful evening.
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.